CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. Burnaby. Bum, 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 bum.
Segment of our show, Linda Weidman will be sharing a little bit of her disability story. So, can you tell me a little bit about your disability story?
Okay. My son is 38 years old, and he has a rare genetic anomaly. There's only 3 people in the entire world that have this specific genetic anomaly, and it results in a physical disabilities. However, it's more prevalent with an intellectual developmental disability. So, my son is supported by a ministry-funded group home here locally, and he's supported 24/7.
So, can you tell me a bit about the diagnosis journey? Being that rare, I can't imagine it was easy to find out what you were dealing with.
No, actually, we just found out the diagnosis was given about 6 years ago. And, however, being born, after he was born, he was born with an undiagnosed heart defect. He went into heart failure at the age of about 2 weeks, but he wasn't really diagnosed until 5 weeks of age, and when he was in critical condition, he was airlifted to London and put on stabilizing medications, and he was having open heart surgery when he was 2 years and 10 months. He had been really delayed, slow on meeting his milestones, and if now he has a severe speech impairment, he has some cognitive deficiencies, and the diagnosis was incremental. He was supported, he attended school, but he was suspended on a monthly basis. Oh, I should say that when he was 5 years old, he went to CPRI in London, the Total Communication Unit, because of his lack of communication skills and also his aggressive behavior. He was there for 16 weeks, and he came home on every weekend. And after he was discharged from CPRI, then he was a study attending school, and he was suspended on a weekly, if not monthly, basis from school, the public school. And he was suspended as a result of his disability. And I found out at that time that he didn't have any rights. They could legally suspend him. So it's been a long 38-year journey.
So, as a parent, how have you kept yourself strong in the hard times?
I could be flippant, but I won't. It was very difficult. My marriage ended in times of a lot of difficulty. When he was 12, in order to access services, which were restricted to me, but were available to Children's Aid Society, I needed to give up custody at that time in 2000 in order to access the services. Bill Harris at that time had dissolved the special needs agreement that were between Harrods, Children's Aid Society, and the government. The government would fund the special needs agreement. Children's Aid would take over supporting the children, and parents would retain custody. But Bill Harris negated those agreements, and I needed to give up custody in order to access those sorely needed services from my son. At that time, I spiraled downwards, and the only thing that kept my sanity kept me sane was power walking. I was walking 10 kilometers a day.
So what would you like society to know about the need for equal rights for parents and caregivers to be able to support their children and actually have those protections and that equality?
Well, as of right now, when our children turn 18, they are deemed as an adult, and they are deemed to have choices. And in order to be able to support our children in the best way possible, we have to have an outlay of money in order to obtain legal guardianship or legal guardianship of medical and legal guardianship of financial. And we're looking upward to $10,000, $8,000, $10,000 by engaging an attorney to acquire legal guardianship. And as I just became aware of this, every 2 to 3 years, every 2 to 3 years, we need to be accountable to the government of if their goals are being met financially and medically. And of course, that there's a cost associated with that. Also, our children don't have the same rights that are accorded to an able-bodied person. And I know in my situation or my son's situation, there were things, issues, problems with the ministry. Same rights as our able-bodied counterparts. There have been issues and problems with the ministry-funded agency, such as they disposed of my son's furniture and belongings without his permission and without any input from me, and denied accountability. There have been issues privacy-wise that I have brought up. I contacted the ombudsman patient, I contacted the privacy commissioner, I contacted Ontario Human Rights, and all to no avail. The ministry and the ministry-funded agency can act and do act with impunity.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
In this segment of our show, Peter Parsons will be giving us an update on his goal ball work. So what's the latest with your goal ball work?
Well, we have a busy month of April coming up with goalball tournaments. Our Nova Scotia team is going to the Ontario Provincial Tournament from April 10th to the 12th. And this is a tournament that has four different divisions, and we're sending a Division II and a Division I team, so basically our men's team, and the Division II team. And then the weekend after that, we actually have a national team training camp here in Halifax. And the weekend after that, we have junior nationals coming up. Our Nova Scotia boys won the tournament last year. And then actually go from, I'll be coaching that tournament and then leaving from Toronto to Buenos Aires, Argentina for a tournament in Argentina, which is like a tune-up tournament for our men, our men's national team before China World Championships in June.
So how are you going about working with the players to get them ready?
Yeah, well, we have regular weekly practices. Our Division I team for the junior nationals are they all practice with our Nova Scotia men, and then our Division II team, which are some younger players, practice on Thursday evenings and also with our recreational practice on Saturdays, where they get gameplay, lots of gameplay with our rec players. So lots of practicing on the court, and then you know, we also do weight training and cardio training and that sort of thing.
So with the international travel coming up, do you find that when the players go and play in another country, that the venues are typically accessible?
Yeah, typically they are quite accessible, especially when we're going to like World Championships, or for example, when we're in Santiago for the Youth Para Pan Ams. They do a good job of making sure the venues are accessible, for sure.
So do you find that with the recent Paralympics that there might be a push towards adaptive and inclusive sport, stemming from press coverage?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it was the most watched Paralympics, you know, and so both the winter and the recent summer games in Paris, well, that would have been 2024 now. Time's really flying. But I had a lot of people comment to me, actually, yeah, I watched goalball at Paralympics, so it's definitely then, I think, gives good exposure to grow the sport at the grassroots level as well. Here in Nova Scotia, we have a little ways to go as far as getting more funding, I feel like, in our sport of goalball.
So, in recent memory, with the play, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Oh, yeah, recently. So our last tournament we had was in at the end of January, the last weekend in January in Montreal. Our Nova Scotia men's team had won that tournament. Our women's team had won bronze medal, so that was very successful. Domestic tournament, and then I would say the internationally at the Youth Para Pan Ams back in the fall in Santiago, Chile, our boys had won the bronze medal after being down by a couple of goals late. Harry Nickerson, who is a kid that I've been coaching since he was 10 years old. 16 at the time. He just recently turned 17, and he scored the game tying and then the game winning goal. That was very exciting, and our girls had won silver medal in that same tournament. Now the junior teams are looking forward to the Junior World Championships, which are in Kazakhstan at the end of November into early December.
So I'm curious, with the youth teams in particular, do you find that there are significant benefits for someone just getting started in adaptive sport? Is that something they use as they progress through their lives to find strength in the face of their disability?
Definitely. I think that being a part of a team sport, there's so many benefits, as we know, but even more so for youth with disabilities and in the case of goalball, of course, visual impairments. I feel that, the friends you make, the confidence you build. I've coached some kids that, because of their visual impairment, weren't able to play, say, a team sport. And so having an accessible sport like goalball, we're on an equal playing field because we wear eye shades that black out all our vision. So no matter what level of visual impairment, we're all on that same playing field. So that's been huge. But I've also coached other kids, which has been more my experience, that have played, the able-bodied, fully sighted, mainstream sports, have done quite well in those sports. But, to be able to play a sport where their vision isn't a factor and they can fully excel. And then I've had kids that have competed at the provincial level, even the national level, but to be able to compete internationally in a sport like goalball has been huge. To be able to travel the world, play in a sport they enjoy with friends they make, against friends they make, in other provinces, other countries. So it's been great.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Great, thank you.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Amputee Support Group aims to provide a place where amputees can share their experiences. The WASG arranges guest speakers, social gatherings, and a peer support mentor program, which is available to both amputees and their families. Our office is now at Hotel de Grasse Healthcare on Prince Road. Appointments are required. To contact the Windsor Amputee Support Group, call 226-347-6678 or email windsoramps@gmail.com. For more information, visit windsoramps.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Linda Weidman shared a little bit of her disability story, and we heard the latest with Peter Parsons' goalball work. In this segment of our show, John Aslin will be giving us an update on Rose City Riot. So what's the latest with Rose City Riot?
We've been putting in a lot of work this season in training and skills development. The team is really loving it, and it's fantastic to see the development that I'm seeing from the athletes, the improvements over the season so far.
So what specific areas are you focusing the training on?
Communication and defensive positioning have been the two important components that we've been working on for the last 6 to 8 weeks, knowing how to communicate, the proper terms to use, when and where, and defensively, of course, positioning, knowing what your responsibility is in the position you're playing.
So is this in preparation for any upcoming event or tournament?
Yeah, so we participate in the Great Lakes Conference. It's a Division II conference for wheelchair basketball with teams from Windsor to the GTA. And we had our first round of games in November. And we actually have games this weekend. Some of us are heading up today. But we play tomorrow morning into the afternoon.
So for those who aren't as familiar with the team, could you take me through a little bit of the work you do?
So we promote wheelchair basketball and parasport within Windsor Essex County. We also, in addition to our weekly practices and our travel team, we also have community demonstrations that we do. We participate in or attend different events that are going on throughout the community. as well as we do go out and visit various schools, high schools and elementary schools in Windsor, Essex, to introduce the students and the teachers there to Wheelchair Basketball as well.
So how do they typically respond with the introduction? I'd imagine for school kids in particular, they look at it and they say, wow, this is really something cool, or this is some great athletes.
Yeah, the biggest response that I get from the kids is how challenging it actually is. When watching it and doing it are two very different things, as with anything in life. But yeah, the number one thing I get is how challenging it actually is for people.
So, as I understand it, wheelchair basketball is a sport where you have to be rolling and concentrating on the ball at the same time, which would require a lot of multitasking.
Yeah, so that's probably one of the biggest challenges that athletes have in their development is because we start in stages, so learning how to push your chair is the first step, getting up and down the court, and then adding the ball to that, being able to carry the ball, dribble the ball while you're pushing. So it does require a lot of hand-eye coordination. It also requires being able to see what's going on the court in front of you so you can react to that as well. So, yeah, once you add the ball to the movement, it definitely ups the difficulty level.
So that being said, do you have any advice for potential players out there who might be asking, can I really take this on as a sport? Would I be able to adapt to all the nuances?
Yeah, so if you can push a wheelchair, you can play. As with anything, the more practice and the more training you put into what you're doing, the better that you can become at it. So for me specifically, me personally, I had a really hard time with learning how to shoot, but I just with patience and determination, it actually took me a couple years, if I'm being honest, to really become more consistent with my shot, but just had to put in the time and effort, as discouraged as I was, it finally paid off.
So, as an athlete yourself, is there any success you've experienced through the sport you'd like to share?
For me, I find success in developing relationships within the community. I gauge my personal success with kind of like who I know in our community. And I mean the wheelchair basketball community. While our teams might be spread out throughout the province, we're actually a very small, tight-knit group of people. And we're always trying to support each other in one way or another, even if they happen to play for a different team. So it's... To me, that's the success, is being able to reach out to a counterpart and get important information or questions answered, things that I might have shortcomings in or not fully understand. There's always somebody that I can reach out to.
So when you do engage in things like tournament or out-of-town play, do you find the venues typically accessible?
Yeah, we make it a point because it's easier for us. We're actually, like, not my group, but our provincial sports organization is doing the scheduling for these, so they make it a point to ensure that the location that they're booking for us for these games is wheelchair accessible. So everywhere we go, we have very accessible washrooms to use, access to the court, and things that we might need at the facility. It's all been very good for us.
So what would the ideal outcome for the tournament be?
Every team wants to win, so if that's the first answer, winning, getting a good record would be one answer for an ideal outcome. I gauge things differently. For me, what a good outcome would be is as long as everybody's having fun and that everybody got to touch the ball. We want to make sure, or at least I want to make sure with my team, that when we go away to events, that everybody that is on roster gets an opportunity to play and have a good time while doing it.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Cam. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Linda's story, my friends, resonates with more families than you might think. For the truth of the matter is, when a family is dealing with a complex medical situation, any sort of disability, the last thing they need is for bureaucracy to make their navigation that much more complicated. Truth is, they need support. They need understanding. For the person with a disability themselves, they need what we all need. Food, shelter, love, understanding. When a family faces those sorts of stresses and difficulties, they're stronger united. The person with a disability will feel it if there's something not right in the situation, no matter what their functionality level may be. That sense of things aren't at peace will resonate with them. They don't want to be a burden or an obligation. They want to be included. They want to be accepted. And why in the world would society put up barriers to that? A person with a disability is like anyone. They might achieve great things. They might achieve just their own dreams. But it all comes down to what opportunities they're given, what supports they're given, and what understanding we as a people offer them. It is unjust to put restrictions and barriers up on a family. If they want to see their child with a disability, they should be allowed to do so. Unless, of course, circumstances bar it for legal or complex medical reasons. But in a day-to-day sense, they should just be allowed to thrive together. They should be able to laugh together, share a meal, do the things that families do. You should not have to give up your rights just to make sure that they have basic needs. I was recently chatting with a friend, and during the conversation, he reminded me, a person with a disability can't be expected to function in the same way in society as anyone else. If they're not allowed to interact with society, they're not allowed to be a part of the outside world, learn the social nuances, gain that experience, get to know people. How can we expect anyone to bust out of those paradigms if they simply aren't given an opportunity to step outside a room once in a while? In fairness, some would argue that certain disabilities would make a person more easily provoked or at risk out in the world. The more overstimulated they get, the greater the risk to the rest of us. However, I think it's a matter of tempering it, recognizing that there is a need and there is also a right. There is potential for someone to ease into societal situations. There is potential for the people to grow in their understanding, for a person with a disability to come to understand the world can be beautiful, complex, enriching place. But that will not happen unless there is an opportunity for people to share time, share experience, and yes, to share wisdom. And it is, in fact, incumbent upon each member of society to ask themselves, what will I do? Will I keep an open mind? Do I put on just a brave public face that says, I embrace diversity, I embrace equality? Or will those ideals mean something when the chips are down? Will they be willing to accept a person with a disability? Armchair support does nothing. Writing a check when you've never actually met a person with a disability does nothing to enhance your knowledge of their story, their unique personality. The truth is, we only grow when we understand disability doesn't just affect one person in this world. It affects us all, for it is the great thread that weaves through every facet of life. Disability is not a curse. It is not about punishing the bad. It is about recognizing a new way of thinking, of getting things done. But when we as a society put up unnecessary barriers and restrictions, we're just complicating things, making things more difficult for families that are already enduring a lot. I think we can do better than that, folks. And why should we put up those barriers? Would we want it done to us? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
For many, a career in music is a dream come true. However, the reality is that many people in the Canadian music industry do not have access to medical benefits and financial aid. This is especially true for our music industry veterans, and it's why the Unison Fund created the Slate Family Foundation Legacy Program. To learn more on how you can support legacy artists and musicians who are coping with unexpected or chronic illness, visit unisonfund.ca.